From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 22nd day of September 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And then K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us for a look at the agricultural energy markets. As we close out this half-hour program, Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll update crop progress in Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska, and get the numbers from a few other states as well. It all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures like this. Nearby December wheat at $4.55¾, down a quarter. The March at $4.75½, down a quarter. And the May wheat at $4.88, down one quarter of a cent. In Kansas City, nearby December at $4.68¼, 3/4 of a cent lower. From the corn pit back in Chicago, $3.25¾. Settlement price, 9¾ higher. March futures at $3.39, up 9¾. And the May corn at $3.48¼, up 9¾. July futures a dime higher at $3.57. And the September contract at $3.65¾ for the 2010 year, up 10 cents. Soy complex now, bean futures $9.22, 8½ cents higher. January futures at $9.26¼, up 7¼. And the March at $9.27¾, up 5½ cents. May futures $9.27¾, up 4¾. July at $9.30½, 4 cents higher. And the August soybeans at $9.25½, up 4 cents. October bean meal at $2.82.10, that's up 20. December bean meal at $2.78.70, up 2.50. October bean oil $34.51.74 higher. Now the live cattle futures $85.27½, up 30 cents for the day. December live cattle at $84.35, 17½ lower. September feeders at $96.75, down 40. The October though were up 12½ cents at $96.85, and the October lean hogs today at $49.87½ cents settled down 27½. December 62½ lower at $48.75 for the day. Those are the numbers from the CME Group. You are listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on this afternoon. Crude oil futures, October contract, $71.55 a gain for the day, $1.84 higher. November contract at $71.76, up $1.83. October ethanol at $1.65, 2⅛ higher. The natural gas at $3.62⅕ in the OCC, up 4½ cents. The RBOB gasoline at $1.78½, 3⅓ cents higher. And the October heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.81¼, up 6⅔ cents. Propane futures, 98⅙ of a cent, just about 3/10 of a cent higher. The gold futures at $1,014.20. A settlement price there up $10.50. The Dow currently at 9,830 has gained just about 52 points on the afternoon. And the U.S. dollar at 76.12 is down 0.65 for the afternoon. CRB index at 258.76 is 4.45 higher on the day. Here's the weather forecast for the two-state region from our own meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight, mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers, some thunderstorms, lows from 58 in northwestern Illinois to 68 in the south. And then tomorrow, a mix of clouds, sunshine, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs will range from 76 in northwestern Illinois to 84 in southern Indiana. The extended forecast calls for unsettled weather to continue through Saturday. Scattered showers, some isolated thunderstorms occurring on a daily basis, says Mr. Kieser. Rainfall coverage will likely be the highest on Friday. Temps should remain a bit warmer than average through Sunday, and humidity levels will also remain moderately high. A significant cold front expected to push from northwest to southeast through Illinois and Indiana Sunday afternoon into Sunday night. That'll usher in some cooler air for the start of next week. Highs will drop to the 60s in the north and 70s to the south. Lows will mostly be in the 40s. More on the weather at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We always talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana on Tuesdays, and he's with us this afternoon to talk about the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Tell me, what was it that happened in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon?
Well, we had a mixture of a little bit of everything, Todd. We had a little bit of turnaround Tuesday. We had crude oil up $1.80. We had the dollar down 60 to 70 cents. We had gold up sharply today, and the stock market overseas and locally up, and a little bit of change in the weather forecast at noon to a little bit of cold weather possibly coming into North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan over the weekend. So all that put together, and then a little bit of talk of some loss of yield because of some of the diseases in the fields, give us a little higher close in both the corn and the beans today, Todd.
Well, that was a nice little higher close. So we had higher prices for crude oil today. We had a lower dollar. Those two things generally go together for higher prices. And then you throw the weather in, and that made a nice mix for Tuesday. But can it be maintained for very long?
Well, we've still got some awfully good early yields coming in, Todd. You know, as much as we'd like to talk about the inflationary factor of the dollar maybe losing some strength and demand being very strong, we're hearing some very, very good yields in most of the places out there that have done much early harvesting. The question being, is the later planted crops, are they the ones that are possibly be more affected by some of the diseases that some of the agronomists are talking about? I mean, it's definitely a possibility, but for right now, we're really thinking that these yields are going to hang in there pretty strong.
And what kind of yields have you heard, and where are they coming from?
Well, over here in Indiana, we're hearing bean yields from probably 48 to 71, most of the beans in probably the 55 to 62 bushel bracket for the early beans that we've seen. You know, we've heard the corn yields, most of them probably 160 to 200 plus, and on the high side. Not much corn at all being run yet, Todd, but we are seeing more and more fields of beans being harvested. But, you know, in Illinois, what we haven't heard a lot of yields, but what we have has been very good.
There are some colder temperatures that are making their way across the western states. Probably will put at least the North Dakota, maybe the South Dakota crop in jeopardy at some point. Is that enough to make any difference in the marketplace?
I'm afraid not a whole lot more than what happened today. I mean, as far as, you know, 10 to 20 cents a reaction in a day, but over the long term, probably not. Probably we've got more indication or problems by the continued rainfall in the south and some of the problems of harvesting or that could result down there if it doesn't start to dry up a little bit soon, Todd.
Yeah, that would be. Would that have more of an impact on the soybean market as opposed to the corn because of the
probably
delta
soybeans,
region?
Rice, and cotton. We have actually more than the corn down there on that. And we are hearing about a little bit of damage occurring in some of the rice and cotton fields from all the rain.
And anything that producers need to be aware of on their crop insurance or on acre programs?
I think the acre program has a deadline coming up as to you need to establish what your priority crop is as to which one you're going to want to follow for the most acres and what that you have. So that's something, if you did sign up for the acre program, you want to be checking with the FSA office here, I think by the end of the week, to sign up for that acre program and how your priority crop is.
Any final word before I let you go?
I think, you know, watch the weather forecast, but on a good rally, if you haven't sold much, why we want to put some offers out there.
All right. Thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report that happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Wayne had to say again, you can do that in one of two ways, actually three ways. You can hear the broadcast directly on the radio station, or you can sign up and have it delivered to you as a podcast. You do that at willag.org. You can also listen to it directly from the website at willag.org if you'd like to. And the final way is to dial this phone number. It's 217-333-3434. 12:34. We updated with the opening numbers, some analysis at about 10:15, and then about 3:15 in the afternoon. We'll take a portion of what Wayne had to say today, plus some of the numbers, and we'll post it there. It's 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. You are, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Yesterday afternoon, USDA released its latest crop progress report. It showed acreage at or beyond the doe stage had reached 75% by the week's end. That's 6 points behind last year, 13 points behind the five-year rolling average. Development to the doe stage, says USDA, was active across much of the growing region. Nationally, acreage at or beyond the dent stage advanced to 32% complete, 10 points behind last year and 28 points behind the average. Progress to the dent stage was behind normal in all estimating states with the exceptions of Colorado and North Carolina. Lags of 33 points or more were evident in the Dakotas, Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota. Acreage mature at 5% was 1 point behind last year, 8 points behind the five-year rolling average. The crop was most mature in North Carolina and Texas. Overall, 69% of the corn crop rated in good to excellent condition. That's down slightly from last week, but still an 8-point improvement over last year. On the soybean side of the ledger, 93% of the 2009 soybean acreage at or beyond the pod setting stage at week's end. That's on par with last year, but 3 points behind the five-year average. Pod development remained active across the major soybean-producing regions of the country despite the below-average temperatures. Leaf drop has occurred on 3% of the nation's soybean acreage, leaf drop most advanced on acreage in the Delta. However, progress in Mississippi, 34 points behind normal. Overall, 69% of the soybean crop rated in good to excellent condition. That's unchanged from a week ago, but about 8 points better than last year.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending September 20th, 2009. Iowa received yet another week of dry, warm conditions, allowing corn and soybean maturity to rapidly advance and allowed a few producers to start harvesting soybeans that were planted on light, sandy soils. The sun-filled days and average nighttime temperatures were exactly what crops needed, although overall, crop development still lags behind the five-year average. Corn and soybeans continue to be rated mostly good to excellent. For a second week, hay producers took full advantage of the weather to put up quality hay. There were 6.9 days suitable for field work in Iowa during the week compared to the five-year average of 5.1 days. With little if any rainfall across most of the state during the week, topsoil and subsoil moisture ratings continued to decline. Topsoil and subsoil moisture rated 59 and 75% adequate to surplus, respectively, with ratings of very short ranging from 10% to 25% across the northern one-third of the state. Nearly all of the corn crop is at or beyond the doe stage, and 89% has reached the dent stage, 6 percentage points ahead of last year, but 5 days behind the 5-year average. 22% of the crop is mature, 11 days behind the five-year average, and condition was rated the same as last week at 75%, good to excellent. The soybean crop continued to develop well ahead of last year, but behind the normal pace. 87% of the soybeans have leaves turning color, and 50% of the acreage is dropping leaves, 3 and 14 points behind the five-year average, respectively. With harvest just getting underway, soybean condition was rated 73% good to excellent, down 2 points from last week. The statewide average precipitation was 0.06 of an inch, while normal for the week is nearly 0.8 of an inch, with no rain reported over the eastern two-thirds of Iowa for a third consecutive week. Temperatures were above normal throughout the week, averaging 1 to 2 degrees above normal over the southeast and 4 to 6 degrees above normal over the northwest. Statewide, temperatures averaged 3 degrees above normal. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending September 20th. Another week of normal temperatures with below normal rainfall continued to advance the maturity of corn and soybeans. The week ended with temperatures averaging right at 66 degrees, while rainfall accumulations were reported at just 1/10 of an inch statewide, which was 7/10 of an inch below normal. Topsoil moisture supplies ended the week down only marginally from the week before at 4% very short, 20% short, 73% adequate, and 3% surplus. Growing degree day units since May 1 are now at 2,724, trailing the historic average by 239 units. The corn crop finished the week at 73% in the den stage, and this compares to 88% 1 year ago and 96% for the 5-year average. 13% of the crop was reported mature, compared to 29% 1 year ago and 69% for the 5-year average. 1% of the corn fields were reported harvested, the same as a year ago, but trailing the 16% 5-year average. Leading the state in the corn mature category was the Southeastern Crop Reporting District at 59%. Overall, 62% of the corn crop was rated in good or excellent condition, down 2 points from last week. Soybeans in the turning yellow stage were reported at 54%, compared to 60% 1 year ago and 82% for the 5-year average. 20% of the state's soybean acreage was reported shedding leaves, and this compares to 22% 1 year ago and 56% normally. Leading the state in the shedding leaves category was the Southeastern Crop Reporting District at 52%. Statewide, 60% of the soybean crop was rated in good or excellent condition, down 1 point from a week earlier. In other crops around the state, the third cutting of alfalfa advanced to 95% complete, compared to 97% for the 5-year average, and sorghum was reported in the mature category on 21% of the planted acres, compared to 65% normally. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Becky Summer with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Nebraska Field Office with the Crop Weather Report for the week ending September 20th, 2009. Warm, dry conditions helped crops progress towards harvest. Temperatures averaged 1 degree above normal last week. There was no significant rainfall across Nebraska. Corn conditions rated mostly good or excellent. Most of the crop is dented. Corn mature was 15% complete, 12 days behind the average. Seed corn, high moisture corn, and silage were being harvested. Soybean conditions rated mostly good or excellent. Over 3/4 of the crop is turning color and nearly half is dropping leaves. The first fields have been harvested. Sorghum conditions rated mostly good or excellent. Over 3/4 of the crop is turning color and is starting to mature. Over half of the winter wheat has been seeded and nearly a third has emerged. Pasture and range conditions continue to rate mostly good or excellent, above year ago levels and well above average. This is Becky Summer with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
Our thanks to the state statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska for their weekly updates through the growing season of conditions in their regions. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien joins us from K-State University. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You sent to me a bit earlier in the day some stats, that I don't know that I completely understand just yet, but hopefully you will be able to take me through the charts that outline the percent of U.S. energy consumption and renewable energy. What do these charts mean? And from those who aren't looking at them, what do they tell us?
Well, when you look at what's happened in, where the proportion of energy supplies have come from in the United States, say from 2004 through 2008, it's interesting to see on the one hand what proportion of that total amount of energy used comes from biofuels, and also to kind of keep in mind how the other major sources of energy also play into all this. Just to hit a few of the larger numbers that energy economists and watchers of the U.S. economy are looking at, the total amount of energy use, say, in 2008 in terms of quadrillion BTUs, lots of BTUs. Quadrillion BTUs was about 99.31 quadrillion BTUs. Out of that, fossil fuels made up 1.4, or about, well, actually about 1.4%. Of course, we're having long and strenuous and important debates about what the mix of energy should be in the U.S., so it is interesting to see where biofuels play in on that. In the bigger picture, you've got coal making up about 22 or 23% of the total energy used in the United States, natural gas about 24, petroleum about 34.5, thereabouts. You have some electricity net imports, but that's pretty small. You have about 8.5% of the total coming in terms of nuclear energy, and about 7.5% of the total energy use in the United States in 2008 came from what we call renewable energy. And in that, you've got a whole number of things lumped in together. Of course, biofuels made up about 1.4 of that 7.4%. Geothermal energy about 0.5%. Hydroelectric, conventional hydroelectric from water, public project dams, that type of thing, about 2.5%. The amount actually from solar energy is about 0.1%, and wind energy, although growing, is about at about 0.5 of a percent. So I guess what's important to see with biofuels is that the amount of energy of the total pie in the United States, I guess, has been increasing. Back in 2004, biofuels made up about 0.5% of the total amount of energy consumed in the U.S., and now we're up to almost 1.5%. And you know, through 2008, we were looking at about 9 billion gallons of ethanol being produced. If we get up to the 15 billion gallons of the renewable fuel standard, then we're looking at probably 2+% of the total amount of fuel, of energy used in the United States. So it's an important part of that. Still not as large as some of the other energy supply resources that we've got.
And let me go back through and sort of recap of this. I know that you got a number mixed up early on because you referred to fossil fuels and then gave a 1.4%. But fossil fuels,
yeah,
you meant to refer to biofuels at that point.
Yes, thank
you. So the fossil fuels from this chart, and these charts come from
EIA? The U.S. Department of Energy.
Department of Energy?
Yeah, Energy Information Agency.
Yeah, EIA. So these come from EIA. Fossil fuels in 2008 made up 84% of the fuel that was consumed in the United States.
Yep.
And then renewable energy tapped in at 7.4% of that. Biofuels, the part that producers would be mostly interested in, made up 1.4%. And I guess the important part there is that it's been on an increase since 2004. So it was 0.5% in 2004, 0.6%, 0.06% in 2005, 0.08 in 2006, and then 1% last year, and 1.4% in 2007, and 1.4% in 2008. And your expectation would be that that would continue to increase in the coming years?
Yeah, no doubt. As we are looking at things right now in 2009, we're probably looking at 1.7 to 2%, something like that, in terms of the total proportion of the energy pie that comes from biofuels. You know, we look at biofuels quite a bit. Wind energy also is increasing. It's right at this time. It's there's less energy supplied from wind energy and solar than biofuels. But you know, we're so driven by policy decisions and directives. It'll be interesting to see where all this goes in about 5 or 10 years.
Dan, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is at K-State in Kansas. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Residents in the tiny central Illinois farming community of Beeson near Lincoln are waiting anxiously as authorities search for suspects in the slayings of 5 members of a local family. Logan County authorities say they're following up leads, but they haven't made any arrests in what the sheriff calls a brutal homicide. The bodies of Ruth and Raymond G. and their 3 children were discovered Monday afternoon in their house by the sheriff's deputies who had responded to a 911 call. They also found one survivor, a 3-year-old girl. Sheriff Stephen Nichols didn't have any details about the girl, but says she was taken to a Peoria hospital. After Nichols advised area residents to lock their doors at night, one man who lives near the G family says he now has a loaded gun in the event anyone tries to get into his home. Police in the Vermilion County town of Indianola say a man shot 2 people to death after they forced their way into his house and tried to rob him. Vermilion County Sheriff Pat Hartshorn says the 2 masked men held the homeowner on the floor at gunpoint last night and choked him while demanding money. The sheriff says the alleged robbers were 22 and 17, but didn't identify them or the homeowner. Hartshorn says the men let the homeowner go when his wife said she had expensive jewelry upstairs. While the men focused on a jewelry box, the homeowner grabbed a handgun and shot them. Hartshorn says another 17-year-old waited in a pickup outside. He drove away but was arrested a short time later. A U of I material science professor has been given $500,000 for his innovation. 42-year-old John Rogers has been named one of 20 MacArthur Fellows. He's won one of the so-called genius grants. Rogers says he'll extend his research beyond mundane projects that are most attractive to traditional grant funding that could form the basis for some existing projects in the future, exciting projects in the future. Rogers is known for his work on very small light-emitting diodes. A maker of circuit protection products and solutions will expand into the U of I's research park. Chicago-based Littlefuse will set up a technical center with a lab that features overcurrent and over-voltage testing. The company will break ground on the facility this fall, hiring 22 employees. When it opens in March, Littlefuse products are used in nearly every product requiring electrical energy. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, I saw a post from you not long ago that said the first snows are on their way. Where might that be?
Well, actually, many areas of the western High Plains, and mostly in the Rocky Mountain states, saw their first fall snow of the season. That occurred across portions of Colorado, the higher elevations of Wyoming, some areas as much as 7 inches of snow down to as low as 8,000 feet. So that's a harbinger, I think, of other things to come, and some of that cooler weather is going to be heading into the midsection and eastern parts of the U.S. later this week.
Well, once that arrives, what do you think will happen to the Midwest? Will we stay very dry, or will it turn wet too?
I think we're going to be looking at some pretty good chances for moisture. There's going to be areas of showers and thunderstorms that will extend from the north central plain states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, south through Iowa, eastern Nebraska, all of the Corn Belt and all the Great Lakes states, and then into the Delta areas. Basically, along and east of the Mississippi River, chances of precipitation are going to be pretty good. There's actually 2 systems, a cold front coming on through and then a storm system over the southern plains that will eject eastward out into the Midwest this weekend and later this week. So prospects for rain pretty high, along with temperatures cooler. Nothing yet, Todd, that I would say is real, real cold. But this is the first real cool system of the early fall season that will probably be followed by a stronger push of cold air right around or just after the 1st or 2nd of October.
Well, I don't suppose farmers are so much worried about the cool system at this point as to the fact whether this wet weather would hang around for a very lengthy amount of time. We oftentimes talk about persistence. Can you see something lining up where we would have a very wet fall in the Midwest?
Well, we've got this wet weather coming in later this week and weekend, although I don't think it's going to sit in and stick around for long. The jet stream is pretty active and gaining speed, so systems, at least at the moment, do not appear like they'll be sitting around for a long time. But we may see the frequency of cooler periods and the frequency of rain pick up a bit.
And then if you turn your attention to other parts of the globe, what do you see in both South America and China?
Well, let's go down south first. Down in South America, southern and central areas of Brazil, and portions of northern, extreme northern Argentina have the best chances for moisture. Although, I would say that most of South America looking at a fairly dry forecast, the exception would be the central and southern areas of Brazil. And in China, wet weather there. Looks like a very active weather pattern across the central and eastern areas. Nothing excessive, but there will certainly be opportunities for occasional rainfall over most of China's growing areas over the next week or two.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
That's your doer.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Join us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.